This program is sponsored by Dave Stahl.
Get ready to kick up some dirt and mud because it's time for San Diego Off-Road Coalition Radio with Dave Stahl. SDORC is here to further off-roading as a safe family experience while promoting and preserving the natural environment. So whether it's bikes, buggies, trucks, or trikes, San Diego Off-Road Coalition Radio brings you the latest news and initiatives in preserving the use of off-highway vehicles and protecting the land and wildlife at the same time. Because, together, everyone achieves more. Now, here is your host, Dave Stahl.
All right, folks, welcome to SDORC Dirt Radio, FM 96.1, AM 1170.
The answer.
Hey, that's Mr. Ed Stoven. Hey, before we get to work here, hey, I just want to thank you and all of our listeners for sticking with us all these years. And I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving. And I think we have to start the show off with kind of a sad note. Malcolm Smith, the most iconic motorcycle rider ever. I mean, Ed, name one better. I can't.
I can name other guys that are close. Came near him.
Yeah.
He owned off-road motorcycling in the 1970s.
Yeah.
In the most influential decade, the biggest decade of off-road motorcycling in American history, he was the man.
He was the GOAT.
And not just the best rider, but just a great person.
Yeah.
An ambassador. Just a nice guy. Everybody loved Malcolm.
How old was he when he passed?
83. And you know, he was a good businessman.
Yeah.
Like, I have a bunch of MSR stuff. I have a helmet. I have a riding outfit.
Oh, really?
A fanny pack. Like, you just know his stuff is going to be good, right? Because Malcolm put his name on it. Yeah. Like, you can't go wrong. Right. I'm going trail riding. I use Malcolm's stuff. I'm going to have a good experience with his stuff.
Because I don't want to have to worry about it.
And he, you know, he was not only a great rider, he was a great mechanic and a great tuner.
Right.
He really knew how to make his equipment function properly.
And it was a God's gift. You know, I mean, when you stop and think about these people that really stand out. I'm reading a book on Jim Hall, who built a Chaparral. First one to put a wing on top of a car. First one to do ground effects. First one to put an automatic transmission in a Can-Am car. Same mentality. You get these little individuals. Same thing as Edison. Same thing as Bell. Almost Henry Ford. These people have something going on in their head that we don't have.
He was driven.
And he was driven to perfection. And he was like, you know how WD-40 got his name?
Water displacement formula number 40.
Because 39 down.
Didn't work.
All right, hey, but we really want to just, you know, give our hearts and prayers out to Malcolm Smith, his family, and what a story. And anything you can find on book or video, definitely get it because it'll be well worth either the read or the view.
I have a selfie of me and him.
Do you really?
I was at the Sand Sports Super Show. So one of our radio sponsors is SNS Magazine.
Right.
Well, they used to go to the show and hand out magazines.
Sure.
Well, Sherry's husband, Steve, is a old motorcycle restoration expert.
Right.
And he brought some of his bikes and he sets them up there. So I was in the booth talking, right, because they're my editors and I write for them. So I'm in there hanging out. And Malcolm Smith walks by, he sees the motorcycles, and he comes in and he wants to talk about old motorcycles.
Sure.
And we sat there for half an hour talking about old bikes. It was one of my great memories of my life.
A tape recorder. This segment is brought to you by Ed Hansen's Muffler, where all your pipe dreams come true. Anything you need exhaust-wise, whether it's for a stock vehicle, a modified vehicle, a hot rod, I think he'll even do exhaust on motorcycles, believe it or not. Give him a call, 699-698-7030. Thank them for supporting STORC Dirt Radio. All right, hey, Ed, we got a special guest on the line. We got Bruce, is it Witcher?
Witcher, yeah, and I'd like to introduce him.
Sure, go right ahead.
Because Bruce, so he's the president of the California Trail Users Coalition, and that's not a widely known organization, but it's kind of an umbrella group where clubs come in and they can get grants and they can do activities under the umbrella of a more proper organization. He, for many, many years, 18 years, he's been the Corva California Off-Road Vehicle Association land use director. Mm-hmm. And he has his finger on the pulse of what's going on from the political perspective of off-roading in California. He's also a club rider. He lives by the Los Padres National Forest. They actually gave him a key to the gates.
What?
And when it rains and they need to close roads so they don't get eroded away, right, he goes and locks them. And he's also a motorcycle rider. So he's a lot closer to my heart than some other people because I love motorcycles. Bruce, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for that introduction, Ed. I really appreciate it.
Did I leave anything out?
No, that's fine. I think you covered the most important thing. Yeah, which is just a little piece of my background.
Right. Well, you know, Bruce, I think people like you and SDORC and Corva and all the other organizations that are working feverishly 365 days out of the year to try to keep the lands open and also keep the lands, you know, being respected by people that utilize them, trash in, trash out, those types of things. What got you excited about being involved? Because I understand you're now a retired dentist, so you were looking at people's teeth all day. Now, I guess because you have motorcycle experience, now you've kind of turned that passion to trying to keep, you know, the deserts and the lands and the hills open and open responsibly.
Well, that's pretty accurate, I would say. Like most motorcycle riders, I started off as a young kid riding around empty parking lots and dirt lots and things in areas that were really under development. And I was from the Bay Area originally, and little by little, I watched all the riding areas up there close. We had several areas that, you know, were along the coast there, up in the Redwoods, that got shut down. And actually, interesting, because during the 70s, they actually started a motorcycle park down south of San Jose there, which was one of the first publicly supported parks. Mm. And of course, the state of California also bought an area called Hollister Hills that was previously a private park and turned that into one of our seven state vehicular recreation areas. Both that area and the Metcalf area exist to this day. So we always had a little bit of somewhere to go, but we saw lands being closed right and left. And I took a long break from riding and rode street riding and did motorcycle restoration for a long time. Eventually came back to it when I saw even more land being closed by Forest Service Travel Management around 2005, 2006. And I started looking around to see who was doing what and where I might be able to help. And Corva was the one that really stood out to me because they had effective advocacy. And under the leadership of Ed Waldheim, they were very influential. If anybody knows Ed or had the privilege to know him, he was another one of those major figures in off-roading who developed a lot of things that were happening at the time, and his influence remains to this day. So Ed really was the one, I think, who inspired me to join Corva and take the land use position. And this was really in response to Forest Service Travel Management, which we saw close probably 80% of the then legal routes in California's National Forest. We wound up with quite a few routes after Travel Management, but nothing like we had before. There were some good things about Travel Management. For instance, it did institute a ban on cross-country travel, which meant you could just ride wherever you wanted. That was not really a responsible way to recreate off-road. And so that was one good thing, but it was done with a very heavy hand, and a lot of promises were made to the riding community that they felt were not upheld on the Forest Service on their end. And so that was kind of a disappointment. But the one good thing is we do have a tremendous amount of riding opportunity left in California, and that's due to a lot of grassroots support by people who join organizations that do advocacy, and there's quite a few of them around. And so kind of pick your poison and join the one that you think would be most effective would be my advice. But join something and get involved, because without a route up to state and federal government, we don't have much of a voice.
No.
As you know, the environmental community doesn't particularly care for us or what we do. So it's a constant battle that goes back well before my time that all of this started, and it never ends. So it takes ongoing commitment by volunteers and people who are willing to commit resources. We've had tremendous support from the manufacturers, dealers. We could always use more, sure. but we're grateful for what we've gotten. So that's kind of how I got involved and why I got involved. And I'm still pretty much doing the same thing I did when I started.
All right. Hey, Bruce.
Get out there and,
hey, Bruce, yeah. can you hang with us? We're going to take a quick break.
Go right ahead.
Got to pay bills. Why'd they just let us do this for free? I don't understand it. SDORC.
No, I totally get it.
Dirt Radio, FM 96.1, AM 1170.
The Answer.
All right, folks, welcome to SDORC Dirt Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
Hey, all you off-roaders, check this out. I found a shop in town that does steam cleaning. Whether
what?
It be, to your engine, your tranny, the vehicle, the suspension, anything you want, super reasonably priced, and they guarantee that when you drive in, you'll drive out.
So if I'm going to work on my car, really work on it, and it's just ugly down there.
Ugly.
I can take it over there, and they'll steam clean it.
Or what if you have an oil leak? What if you have an oil leak? The whole engine's covered in oil. How are you going to figure it out?
And then the dirt sticks. And
the
you got
dirt
the stick,
sticks and the mud sticks.
And you want to work on it.
And you don't want to do it in your driveway. I mean, your neighbors.
I can't lay under my car. And,
well, see, and if you have one of those associations, you can, no.
Oh, yeah. That's even worse.
So you go over here to Asmar. And I know it sounds like a commercial. That's because it is. 8621 Troy Street. I personally would make a phone call, make an appointment, tell them what you got. Even if you come back from the desert and your vehicle's just filthy, take it over there. They'll do a nice clean on it. But the thing I like is once they know what to spray and they know what not to spray and what to protect.
That's so important because those electrical parts.
I know. Motorcycles, dune buggies, cars, trucks. I don't care. Getting ready to sell a car? Spray paint or detail the motor. People will love it. And it's easier for you to stay on top of what's going on. Heat kills a motor. And if it's packed in dirt, mud, and oil, it's going to be a problem. Napa Auto Care, ASC certified, AAA as a bonus. 619-589-1188. Thank them for calling. Supporting San Diego Off-Road Coalition and Zebra Adventures. If you're going to take a vehicle and trick it out and go to the desert, then Zebra is the place for you. These guys are so passionate. Right up there on Miramar Road, they give a great discount to the military. These guys are amazing. You just need to take a run up there when you have an opportunity and give them a shot at whatever it is you're looking for. You could give these guys a call at 858-397-2440, 858-397-2440. They're at 8286 Miramar Road, right on this main drag. Check these guys out. And when you do, thank them for supporting STORC Dirt Radio, because without this radio show, there's a good chance we won't have as much land to play in as we do today. We have an amazing guest on the line. I'll let you introduce him since you enjoy that.
This is Bruce Witcher. He's the president of the California Trail Users Coalition and the longtime land use director of the California Off-Road Vehicle Association,
right.
CORVA.
Perfect. All right, so Bruce, I got to tell you, this is the most important question you're going to get all day. What motorcycle did you start out as as a kid?
Well, one of several. I think it was my 90cc Bridgestone two-stroke kind of got me started on the off-road thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a light but powerful bike at the time.
Yeah.
It was especially good on a flat track or a circuit, a small circuit like that, where you could outrun the larger bikes without any problem because you had better handling, lighter weight.
And didn't they sell those out of Sears?
I think you're onto something.
Well, no, but I had some Sears bikes, too. But no, this was marketed by Bridgestone, which at the time was a fairly well-known Japanese manufacturer.
Okay.
But they were eclipsed by some of the other larger makers eventually.
Yeah. So I got to tell you a cute story. So I had, I don't know, if it was an antique motocross group here in town. And they brought all their beautiful bikes, you know, the Bultacos, the Husqvarnas. And this kid had a Bultaco. Dude, it looked like it just came out of the showroom floor. thing was beautiful.
Wow.
So I asked him about it. I said, so, hey, man, how do you like your Bull Taco? He says, this is the best off-road bike ever. I said, well, how hard is it to start? He goes, oh, no, starts like a dream. Then it's not a Bull Taco. You got something else under the tank because it can't be a Bull Taco.
That's funny. When I was racing vintage motocross, and I would always park at the top of Mako Hill.
Mako, yeah, right.
Right, so I could bump start it down the hill.
So you went street biking, huh? What possessed you to do that, and what did you ride in that venue?
Well, at the time, you know, we didn't have a whole lot to choose from, rode British Stumpers.
Ah, okay.
Because they were cheap and available.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of Harleys and Indians, too. That was how I got into the restoration game, which I think I had fun with for about 10 years.
Yeah.
So I've been in pretty much every aspect of motorcycling at one time or another.
Right.
I've done cars, too, but I always have a fond spot for motorcycles like Ed does. So that's how come we know each other.
Yeah, my bike of dreams, if I could afford it, except now, as big as I am, I'd look pretty stupid on it, is a 66 Honda 305 Scrambler. That bike would do anything you asked it to do, and
really?
Then some.
Huh. There might be one
when
around.
They came out new. Yeah.
Weren't they?
They were quite the bike in their day. Nobody had seen anything like them.
Beautiful, beautiful bike. I mean, the lines, even with the collector on the tailpipe, it still had a style to it that it wouldn't quit. So, hey, Ed's actually sent you some information, and I like it when Ed brings news to the show because this is stuff that most people wouldn't normally find. So, Ed, I'm going to let you and Bruce kind of go over what you brought in.
Okay, so I'm really annoyed, Dave. Amy Granite, who works with Corva, she says, hey, have you looked at the Tortoise management plan? And so she sends me the link, and I start clawing my way through it. So the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service is preparing right now it's in the draft form, a general conservation plan for the desert tortoise.
To protect it.
So the desert tortoise is an endangered species. It's on the federal list. And off-roaders in California have lost more opportunity to the protection of this species than any other source.
As far as land goes.
As far as public land goes, yeah. I mean, private land, I'm sorry about that. But
yeah.
So there's been a lot of trouble. So they're formulating a new management plan to look at it. And I scroll down to the map. Right, and there's a map, and they shade the area that they think needs to be protected for it. And so I look at this map, and there's like an island next to it. And this island, it's the whole perimeter of Anza-Borrego Desert State Park. Right, and Anza-Borrego is in San Diego County.
Right.
It's about 700,000 acres. There's about 500 miles of street legal routes out there. So what's bothering me about it is I've never heard of a desert tortoise anywhere in Anza-Borrego Desert State Park, ever. And I've been out there a lot. I've lived here my whole life. I've off-roaded over there. There's no tortoise. So the problem with this plan, is that what they're proposing is if you want to do anything in this area, anything, there's a technical term called take. And that means like you bother. However, you take it, you shoot it, you drive over it.
Right.
There, you need to get an incidental take permit. And an incidental take permit can cost, at a minimum, maybe $50,000.
What?
And they can take a year or a couple of years. It's a very complicated and technical process. And it's designed, like, if you want to, like, develop an area.
Oh. Right? I thought you were talking about day use.
No, so casual use will still be allowed, but what worries me is if you want to plan a traveling event in the park, they may require you to get an incidental take permit. So, okay, we're going to drive on these known routes. Everyone's driving on them. Our group is going to drive through here. I'm worried they're going to want to require an incidental take permit for you to do this.
Well, you know they will. Bruce, what do you think?
Well, this is always a problem, and what they're doing is, you know, they do have a process by which incidental take permits can be issued for federal projects on federal lands, but it requires what they call a Section 7 consultation with USWFS to get that. And it is a lengthy and drawn-out process. I think the solution for Anza-Borrego State Park would be for the state to apply for the ITP and work out some sort of deal with USWFS for existing routes of travel, because the difficult thing with these plans is they cover habitat areas, not just individual roads and trails. It's anywhere that the tortoise can live is potential for take, so they have to cover the entire area. So I think this is really a question for state parks, because, you know, off-roaders are not the only ones using those routes. Those routes of travel are essential for any visitor going to Anza Borrego to even be able to get around, to get to their favorite hiking trailhead, or if they mountain bike, or they do anything at all. So they're going to need to have some sort of access, because that is state park lands. I'm sort of surprised that they didn't grant some kind of exemption to a facility, especially a state park that has conservation mission. So I think there's some negotiation that could go on with this. And, of course, if you hold an event, an organized event, a lot of times they will try to stick the organizer with the additional cost of things like these special permits. So that would be a concern. But that's a discussion that we'll have to have with Department of State Parks. Fortunately, we have a good working relationship with them. We also have a large SVRA down there, State Vehicular Recreation Area, which all San Diego listeners are going to know about, because Ocotillo Wells SVRA is a big place, and a lot goes on down there. That seems to be excluded from the project area for this somehow. So that's fortunate. I guess there's just not enough viable habitat there to make it interesting to the Fish and Wildlife Service.
Right.
So, Ed, did you look into that and see if maybe that was excluded from the project area?
So Ocotillo Wells is excluded. I have a call in to Anza Borrego. I called and I wasn't able to get to the person, but I'm going to keep trying for the resource person and the biologist. And I want to really dive into this and see why this is in the map. Have there ever been a tortoise sighted there? And I emailed you this map, Bruce, and I also look on the other side of Imperial County, and I see they're calling that habitat. And I have a call in to Carrie, the resource person at El Centro Bureau of Land Management, to see, have they ever seen a tortoise out there? Is there, I've never heard of a tortoise being in East Imperial County. And I started doing a little research, and there's an elevation range that the tortoise is comfortable. And it said from 1,300 feet to about 5,000 feet. And this area in East Imperial County is below 1,300 feet. It's like in the sea level range. And I'm just wondering why it's included. It may not even matter because of the national monument proposals, but I'm still curious. And even if there's a national monument, those routes are going to be there, and they may still allow it to have travel events. And I want these travel events to be able to go smoothly, you know, without having to force an organizer to get an incidental take permit. What do you think, Bruce?
Well, from what I understand, they're going to kind of review the applications area by area. And what they're interested in doing is protecting higher quality habitat areas. They realize there's a range, and that if you have a low quality area where there's no tortoises, they're not going to be fussed about that. What they want to see is existing tortoises translocated to areas where they can actually survive. The problem with that is, as we know, the translocation programs have not been successful. And they even have a clause in this draft plan that says, yeah, we got a couple of desert tortoise protected areas, but they're not been successful because they don't have enough species density there to assure a viable population. So don't call and ask to have your tortoises put in these existing protected areas, because they're not working.
Because the tortoise doesn't want to be there.
I've heard that tortoises have actually traveled back to their original area.
Hello, if I take you out of your neighborhood and I put you up on a hill, chances are you're coming back.
You put me over in Watts, I may go back to Claremont.
All right, hey, let's take one more break. You're listening to STORC Dirt Radio with our very special guest, Bruce Witcher. He is the president of Caltrails, plus more other things than I can imagine, right here on FM 96.1, AM 1170.
The Answer.
We'll be right back.
right, folks. Welcome back to STRC Dirt Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The answer.
Oh, sorry.
I'm here.
SNS Off-Road Magazines. Man, I just got my December edition. You can get it online, or if you're an old fart like me, you can actually pick up handheld magazines. But I got to tell you, I'm starting to kind of gravitate towards the online, because you can read it, flip a page, and you can be done in no time at all. So you need to go to SSORMAG.com. That way you can download it, you can subscribe to it. And Ed just had a really two-page article. But you do what, a two-page almost every time?
Yeah, every month I get something in there. And we talk about our events as well as the problems. Like next month, I'm going to talk about this tortoise thing.
Well, speaking of events, before we jump and get back with our buddy, with Bruce, talk about the TDS event that's coming up.
Do you mean Corral Canyon?
I think that would be the one.
Okay, so that's a number of groups are having a trail maintenance day, and the Cleveland National Forest, the Descanso District at Corral Canyon. We're going to be meeting at Four Corners, which the off-roaders, we all know where that is. So we're going to be at Four Corners, I think 8:30 in the morning.
Yep, 8:30 to 1, raffle and lunch, and Bo is cooking.
Really? I thought we were cooking, SDRC. So
take you off the hook.
So we go out there, and we get loppers, and we go out on the trails, and inevitably the bushes are growing into the trail.
Sure.
And I always go down the motorcycle, the skinny trails, right? But then the 4x people, they go to theirs. And so we clean up the trails. We make it better for everybody. And the forest gets credit. So what happens is the forest gets a state parks grant, right? A green sticker money grant. The Cleveland in this area, it's not a lot. It's maybe a little below 100,000 a year. And they're required to put up 25% of the project. And for cash. So if they want to get a $100,000 grant, they got to put up $25,000. Well, these volunteer hours can count as that match. Mm. So they love it when a bunch of people come out and work to help our area make it better. And then they get, I don't know, $20-something an hour for each hour each person works. And that can go a long way towards the proper management of the area.
Fantastic.
And so I used to not like agency people being anywhere near a place I wanted to go, but I really didn't understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. So what's really going on is, for this place to stay open, it needs to be managed properly. So we need personnel who want to get paid to go out there and do things. Sometimes they smooth out trails. Sometimes they clean up the restroom. They'll put signs up. They do a variety of activities that help keep an area open. So we like that, and we want them there.
So this should be a fun event on the 14th, which is a Saturday.
Yes, and you'll see a lot of crazy, interesting vehicles. There are a lot of nice people. We'll spend the morning fixing up the place. We'll have a lunch and a raffle, and then we can go back out and play around and enjoy the trails we just worked on.
There you go. And if you take your loppers with you in case you missed one, or
I do.
Adjust accordingly. All right. Also, that's SNS Off-Road Magazine, Wayne Miller Tire. Boy, I tell you what, you need a tire from a golf cart to a tractor trailer, Wayne Miller is the guy for you. They also do general repair now. They figured, what the heck? They didn't want to turn any of their great customers away. So if you're in there for tires and you haven't had your vehicle serviced in a while, go ahead and have them do that as well. Factory trained technicians, all certified, 619-596-2800. And just tell them thanks for supporting SDORC Dirt Radio. All right, so let's get back. We were talking with Bruce Witcher, and you guys were discussing some
we're talking about
protect the turtle.
So they're trying to protect the desert tortoise, and that's fine. They can protect it, but boy, we don't want unfair restrictions to our activities. Right. And I was wondering if there could be a blanket incidental take permit, or if it would have to be each time. Bruce, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that needs to be determined, but the way I was reading the document is they want to protect the tortoise. So basically, they want to know where the tortoises are being potentially injured. So they're going to work with all the landowners to get permits in place so they kind of know what's going where. and they can the better areas that really matter and maybe not spend so much energy permitting the areas that don't. So I think, you know, again, like most things, this is an opportunity for negotiation. And the big thing is to keep the doors open. For one way you can do that, not a lot of people get to this level, but Ed, I know you have written many comments on federal rulemakings, and this is basically one of those opportunities that we have. We can send in written comments on this proposed conservation plan, and that's one thing that CORVID does. It's a lot of hard work going to meetings and writing comments, and you have to have a certain level of expertise to do this in a way that's effective. Although, actually, we found individuals who take the time to do that can be more effective than they would think. So being involved in the public process behind all these big land use plans is absolutely key. I think, Ed, you and Amy are working on writing comments on this conservation plan for the tortoise. So that's the sort of thing we need more of, where we have individuals that are willing to take the time to read through these lengthy documents, where their strengths and weaknesses are, and give feedback to the agency. And that gives us a better leverage when we go to protect public land for public use and not just close it down for everybody.
So I've been looking through this document, and there's a public comment period open now. It's a 60-day period. It ends December 10th. So I've got about 10 days to complete my comments. And so this coming week, I want to talk to the agency staff of the two agencies I described before, Anza-Borrego Desert State Park and El Centro BLM, and find out just what is going on. Are there actually tortoises out there? It's possible they're in Eastern Imperial County. I don't think there are any in Anza-Borrego. And I'm really appalled that that's even lit up on the map here. So I'm going to be writing comments for SDORC, saying our organization, we go to these places and we're disturbed that there's the possibility of having to get an incidental take permit to protect a species that is not present there, has no history of being there. We don't know why it's on the map. So I'm going to be giving them my two cents. And by the way, Bruce knows this very well, but for the listeners, if a agency does something like this, and when they finish it, they do something that you don't like, you can take them to court and sue them. But you can only sue them if you submitted comments at the draft stage, right? That gives you something called standing. So the only way you can get standing is by submitting comments. So if we're really mad, we're going to get comments in, and then if we come out the way we don't want, we may hire a lawyer and go after them. Like, why are you requiring this in a place where the species has never been? So that's something that's got me up in arms. I'm really kind of upset about that. And Bruce, I sent you what I sent you was my notes on the Imperial Sand Dunes Recreation Area business plan. So the BLM is looking at the dunes, the Imperial Sand Dunes. So this is Glamis, Gordon's Buttercup. This is the biggest sand dune network in the United States, probably the most visited off-road area in the world. They had
it's huge.
They had maybe 200,000 people out there ending today, this past weekend. They estimated 200,000 visitors to this not that big of an area, which makes me not want to go anywhere near it, especially with my motorcycle. How about you, Bruce?
Yeah, it's a challenge.
So about 23 years ago, the BLM, they realized they did not have enough money to manage the way that was effective to keep it open, to keep it viable. They needed to charge money. So they started charging money to camp there. And it wasn't well received, but they kind of pushed through that. And it was a requirement. The problem is, if they don't have enough money to manage an area properly, then our environmental adversaries can come in and they can create a lawsuit that says that the area is not being protected properly, managed properly, and they're going to ask for it to be closed. So as much as I don't like camping fees and I don't like fees getting raised, I still want the area to be open, and it's worth spending a couple of bucks to keep an area open. So in 2013, they upgraded the plan. They raised the fees a little bit. And now, right now, this year, they're looking at increasing fees again. And they released a document, what they call a business plan, and I wrote comments on it. I read it, and it was all very reasonable. As everybody knows, there's been a lot of inflation the last couple of years since the COVID pandemic, and the cost of doing business out there has gone up. Now, Bruce, I don't know if you knew this, that there's different pay scales for different BLM offices, and El Centro was below the Los Angeles pay scale. So the LA scale included Palm Springs, even Needles, California, and Barstow, and Ridgecrest. So those four offices were getting paid at the higher level, but the El Centro office, the staff were being paid at a lower level. So they got that fixed, and those. So here's a problem with that, and I've been a friend of that office for a long time. I was on the Dunes advisory for many years, and I'd go in there, and we'd meet the new head of law enforcement. 6 months or a year later, that person would leave. And they just had trouble keeping quality staff working there. So they were able to raise their pay scale, and that is part of why they need to raise the camping fees, so they can keep that quality staff at the place. I said a lot.
So let's go ahead and take a quick break. We got one more segment to go right here on SGORC Dirt Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
All right, folks. Welcome back to SGORC Dirt Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
Hey, this segment is brought to you by Lifestyle Garage in Lakeside. Lifestyle Garage, if you have a Jeep, Chevy, Ford, Toyota, doesn't make Mazda, we don't care. These guys can take your vehicle and turn it into the dream of your choice. Maybe you don't have a vision of what it could be. Well, these guys at Lifestyle do. Everything that they have in their shops are either on their own personal vehicles, and they have been tested to the nines, man. I tell you, these guys will pound on them. And once they pass their scrutiny, then it ends up in the shop. But, hey, if you're not just into off-road, but you'd like to have a good, honest shop that'll take care of your car, they do general automotive as well. They do leasing. They do it all. Give Tony or Maverick a call at 619-499-5323 and thank them a million for supporting SDORC Dirt Radio. So, Bruce, we've been talking. By the way, I appreciate you taking time out of your Sunday to share your thoughts with the off-road community. And not being political, but do you think the new – I know it's California, and the new administration is not going to have a lot to do with the new administration, but do you think there's going to be any positive changes, or is it going to be status quo?
That's really hard to say, and that's a question we're all asking ourselves. We find that it doesn't really matter which administration is in power. There's a lot of other factors.
Right.
We've been burned both by Republican and Democratic administrations over the years. We've had large wilderness bills that closed vast areas that were previously open under both administrations. And so we're very circumspect about jumping on with one party or other.
Gotcha.
The concern I have about the new administration is they seem to want to do a lot of oil and gas leasing, and renewable energy development may get in there too. At one point, the Trump administration was trying to overturn the Desert Renewable Energy Conservation Plan. It was actually a very good plan for off-roading and set aside a tremendous amount of area for off-road use, and basically kind of kept the renewable energy development at bay. So that was a concern. That didn't happen. That DRECP is one of the few plans where we were really at the table and incredibly influential in getting recreational areas protected against development. So, you know, sometimes, you know, you got to find out what you have in common with whoever happens to be in power. We're encouraged because they have got some appointments coming up for Secretary of Agriculture who may be helpful to us. Mm-hmm. And we previously, under the Trump administration, actually sent them a petition asking that they revisit Forest Service travel management. So we may have another opportunity to bring that up again. So it can kind of blow either way.
Right. But these guys seem to listen to what both sides have to say instead of just making a hard-nosed decision and close something down. I mean, I'm not anywhere near in deep enough to know what I'm talking about, but it just seems like, you know, this administration, if they don't see something right, they seem to back up and go a different direction. I don't know. You're right. We'll have to wait and see. But I think if we talk to our legislators, talk to the organizations that have lobbyists, and get that word out, then, you know, hopefully you're right. This will be a good administration. All right, Ed, I'll let you get back to your list because it's 4 pages long.
All right. So we were talking about the Imperial Sand Dunes. So what do they do with that money? Why do they need all that money? So I have a list of things that they do with the money. Emergency medical services. So you have 200,000 people out there. Someone's going to run into somebody. Mm-hmm. They have 2 rescue buggies. So a rescue buggy is a 4-seat dune buggy, except on the right side, there's a stretcher.
Right.
Right. So one guy's driving. Another guy's behind him working on the person in the stretcher. That is valuable. So those things cost money. To have people out there who can drive them and who can help people, that costs money.
Right.
Search and rescue. Law enforcement. Law enforcement is a big, important cost of managing that area. And just having them out there is a powerful deterrent to bad behavior. Mm-hmm. If there's nobody out there, you know how people will go nuts. Trash collection. I wish they didn't have to do trash, but there's an awful lot of trash out there. You imagine that many people, every dumpster is overflowing. Mm-hmm. That costs a lot of money to manage that trash. Facilities maintenance of ranger station and vault toilets. So they have 61 vault toilets. Those are the ones that are out there and they don't have plumbing, right? There's a big hole in the ground. Mm-hmm. So someone's got to put paper in there, clean them up, and mm-hmm. once or twice a year they got to vacuum them out. Sand removal from access roads and camping pads. So a few years ago, at the end of one of these big weekends, the wind blew a foot of sand on a road, blocking in a whole bunch of people. Well, the BLM have heavy equipment and an operator, and they can go right out there and push that out of the way. That's not free. Dust suppression. So Imperial County got sued by the Sierra Club over dust. So they're doing things to reduce the dust. Here I have pumping vault toilets, sensitive resource protection, fencing and signage. There's stuff out there they got to do that off-roaders don't really know about or care about, but they still got to do it. Mm-hmm. Natural and cultural resource monitoring, inventory and protection. And then administrative services to all the people that are out there working. So it costs a lot of money. So they want to raise their fees a little bit, like for a week from $35 to $55. And then for an annual pass, $150 up to $185. So I don't oppose it. I don't know.
Well, I'll be a devil's advocate.
Go
I just
ahead.
Want to see what the price is for each of those line items. And as mm-hmm. long as it's reasonable, I'd have no problem with it either.
I actually went through all that, and they justify it.
Okay. Well, like I said, I mean, look at it yesterday. Would you do what they're asking you to do for that kind of money? There's a good chance in some cases you'd say sure, but you know, like,
yeah, you want to earn a living, right?
Yeah, well, that's
people need to get paid to pull that trash out. So what if they get extra money? What if like something happens? So extra money would develop recreational access and off-highway vehicle safety training, interpretive panels and kiosks, maintenance and upkeep to BLM ranger stations, improvement and maintenance of access roads, including Wash Road, Gecko Road, Grayswell Road, building additional ADA-compliant camping areas. So they got plans if they make a little extra money.
It sounds like they're listening to somebody. Bruce, what do you think?
Well, you got to pay to play. And I can tell you that the BLM doesn't get much of a budget for developed recreation. And a place like Imperial Sand Dunes is one of those places. And the allocation they get as part of the federal budget is actually pathetic. The Forest Service has the same problem. They're reaching out to volunteers such as Ed's group who will go out and do trail maintenance because they can't afford to hire their own staff, or they can't even hardly find staff that will come for them because they only pay slightly above minimum wage for their rec techs and people like that. So all these federal agencies are really kind of strapped. And the only way they can keep areas open is to have volunteers fill in. And there's a lot of benefits to volunteering with groups like Ed's or mine. you go out and all of a sudden you got skin in the game, that section of trail that you just cleaned up and brushed, you ride through that, mm-hmm. you can look back and say, see what I did? I made a difference here. Mm-hmm. And it also changed your attitude toward resources. If you go in and it's all chewed up and you have to go back and fix it because it's all rutted out and eroded, and somebody went in there and did bad behavior, you're going to be much more likely to maybe call somebody on it the next time they start, you know, spinning donuts or doing something destructive that's really not necessary. So there's a lot of benefits to volunteering, and that's one way you can help offset some of these cost increases. But all the agencies are doing that. We have camping areas where we did a lot of the development work and wrote grants to get that money. They went and leased to an outside agency because they didn't have the manpower to come in and manage it. And we were not happy about that, but at the same time, we understood that they just don't have the staff to do the pickup trash, to clean the vault toilets and all that. So sometimes you just got to reach for in your pocket, maybe not buy some of the neatest, latest accessories for your bike or your ride, and spend the money on something else instead. If you look at what people spend outfitting, you know, their vehicle, whatever type that is, it can add up to tens of thousands of dollars.
Hundreds, so, Bruce. You go to the dunes, so expensive.
Yeah, but you know vehicles. What? Here's my deal. You know all these colleges that have degrees in forestry, right?
I mean, you can major in.
I got one in my neighborhood.
Well, there's your volunteers. There's your volunteers. You know, to graduate out of this class and get a passing grade, you need to develop, or you need to donate X amount of hours to a area that needs to be maintained that these folks can't afford to do. I'm just saying. Hey, buddy, it was great having you on the show. You can come on anytime you like. It's wonderful having somebody that's vested in what we're trying to do. And we've been doing this how many years now?
7 or 8.
Yeah, at least. And everybody needs to do their part. If there's a time to do comments, please get involved. If you go to sdorc.org, you can find all the links to all of your representatives. You know, join CORVA, join SDORC, join Friends of Oceana Dunes. We're only talking $25 a year. And that little minuscule amount of money will help keep the lands open and keep us on a right path to be respectful. And let's hear it for the turtles.
Bruce, thank you very much for coming on today.
No, thanks, everybody. It was a lot of fun. Thank you for the invitation. And Ed, thanks for doing this for 7 or 8 years. That takes a real commitment. You've always been the best.
Thanks, Bruce.
He does work hard. Yeah, all right. That's SDORC Dirt Radio FM 96.1 AM 1170.
The Answer.
Coalition Radio with Dave Stahl. The program that is working to further off-roading as a safe family experience while promoting and preserving the natural environment. To learn more about SDORC and how you can get involved, visit SDORC.org. That's SDORC.org. Join us next week at this same time for more of the latest news and initiatives in preserving the use of off-highway vehicles while protecting the land and wildlife at the same time. This has been San Diego Off-Road Coalition Radio on The Answer San Diego.